Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schreib. I'm your host for the hour. With engineer Mike Murphy and co-host Mike Metz is here. And Mark Edwards has made an appearance. Our good friend from Boone County. And have some environmental comments later on in the show. But Mike, what's new at your Prairie Winds Farm this fine spring day?
Well, this fine spring day, Pat, it's a little bit wet, but the toad tadpoles are starting to form legs. Other than that, I can't tell you much because I've been doing a lot of fundraising here for KHOI.
Oh, wow. And God bless you for that. And we'll have some about fundraising. It is our spring membership fund drive. If you're considering becoming a member, best thing to do would be jot down this telephone number, 515-292-2878, or go to the website, khoifm.org. But we'll have more about fundraising throughout the hour, as there is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wing, so to speak, this 10th day of June, 2022. And we passed the 100th day of the war in Ukraine. As this conflict seems to be entering a phase of attrition, I encourage people to follow KHOI War in Ukraine each Friday at noon with Svetlana Savarchik, where she provides timely updates from her homeland. Again, each Friday at noon on KHOI.
It's currently 63 degrees out there. Today it'll be partly sunny and pleasant with a high of 76. The rains will continue in their forecast throughout the day. We want to anticipate a pleasant high, I would hope, of 83 degrees Saturday, and then strong thunderstorms are forecast for Sunday with a high reaching 85. Then a heat wave next week, folks, with 92 degrees on Tuesday and additional showers on Wednesday. So let's welcome Dennis Hart now with a summary of the news last week from our local newspapers.
Those fatal shootings outside a church in Ames topped the news in the Ames Tribune this past week. It took place last Thursday night outside the Cornerstone Church near Interstate 35 and Highway 30 in Ames. Authorities said 33-year-old Jonathan Lee Whitlatch of Boone shot and killed two young women, then turned the gun on himself and committed suicide. The fatal victims were identified as 22-year-old Eden Montang of Boone and 21-year-old Vivian Flores of West Des Moines. Both were students at Iowa State University, and both were at the church Thursday night for a worship service. Story County Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald said Whitlatch fired several rounds from a 9mm handgun. He said Whitlatch and Montang had just broken up from a relationship. A few days earlier, Whitlatch had been charged with harassment and posing as a public official in a domestic incident in Ames. Court records reveal this was not the first time Whitlatch had been accused of violent or inappropriate actions toward women. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds called the shooting an act of senseless violence. She said she and her husband Kevin were grieving for the families who suffered what she called an unfathomable loss. Ames Mayor John Healey issued a statement saying, as a community and as a country, we must work together to create an environment in which hurting others is never an acceptable option. Hundreds of mourners gathered last Friday morning at Cornerstone Church. Lead pastor Mark Vance said the shootings were, in his words, something we can't quite comprehend. Many of those who attended that service were young. Some were hugging and crying in their grief over the loss of the two women who were killed. Now let's go back to last Friday's paper, which reported that less than a quarter of the buildings Iowa State University had assessed for its first strategic facilities plan in three decades are in good to fair condition. That plan envisions extensive demolition and renovation in the heart of campus over the next 30 years. The State Board of Regents approved the plan last week. Individual projects would still need board approval later. Among the anticipated changes, construction of a new industrial engineering building, the demolition of the armory, and the creation of a holistic health and wellness center. The plan did not assess the condition of residence halls, Hilton Coliseum, parking structures, and other buildings. It assumes a university enrollment of 30,000 to 35,000 students. It was also rumored that Ames Planned Parenthood had recently finished a state-of-the-art renovation project. The Planned Parenthood North Central States contributed $700,000 to the Ames Clinic on Chamberlain Street to update technology and improve exam and waiting rooms. The center served more than 2,300 patients last year. Planned Parenthood is often associated with abortion care. Its centers also provide a variety of sexual and reproductive health care, including cancer screenings, birth control, and emergency contraception. The Ames Center also offers testing for sexually transmitted diseases, counseling, and LGBTQ services. Last Saturday's paper was, of course, dominated by reports of the shootings at Cornerstone Church. But there was also a report on some new lawsuits filed on behalf of two Iowa meatpacking workers who had died of the coronavirus. Those lawsuits allege that their employers, Tyson Foods in Waterloo and JBS in Ottumwa, ignored not just federal guidelines, but international warnings in failing to protect their workers. They are at least the eighth and ninth lawsuits filed by families of Iowa workers who died in the pandemic. Seven of those cases are now pending against Tyson and two against JBS. Sunday's paper reported that the Iowa National Guard had issued a news release saying that one of the victims of the Thursday shooting in Ames, and the shooter, had been members of the same Guard unit based in Ames. The National Guard said neither Eden Montaigne nor Jonathan Whitlatch was on active duty at the time of the shooting. Whitlatch shot and killed Montaigne and Vivian Flores outside Cornerstone Church in Ames last Thursday night, then shot and killed himself. Sunday's paper also had a long takeout on Story County residents who oppose future annexation near Ames. The city and Gilbert and Story County are in the process of drafting an updated urban fringe plan. Ames and Story County say that the plan is important for the future growth of Ames because available land in the city is limited. But opponents say it gives too much power to the city of Ames and puts their rural way of life at risk. A final draft of that plan is expected to be approved before the end of summer. Also Sunday, word that Iowa Democrats had submitted a proposal to the Democratic National Committee in their bid to continue holding first-in-the-nation caucuses. Under the plan, Democrats would cast written presidential preference cards in the weeks leading up to the caucuses, either through the mail or at physical drop-off locations, and party officials would announce the results on caucus night. The National DNC had made it clear it intends to change the presidential nominating calendar to give more emphasis to competitive, diverse states capable of running a smooth nominating contest. By mid-August, the National DNC will decide which states will make up the early voting window, and that will seal Iowa Democrats' fate. And the Trib reported on itself. The paper announced it was reversing its previously announced decision to cut back its print publication schedule to 3 days a week, and instead would maintain its current six-day-a-week publication schedule. The Tribune's editor, Gage Schertz, said the company that owns the Tribune, Gannett, is analyzing new data and taking into consideration input from subscribers. The Trib publishes a print edition every day except Monday. Tuesday's paper reported that the leaders of Iowa State University and the University of Iowa have each received $50,000 raises from the State Board of Regents. ISU President Wendy Winterstein's annual salary will go from $600,000 to $650,000. She also will receive a deferred compensation plan starting July 1st and finishing 2 years from now with annual contributions of $40,000. University of Iowa President Barbara Wilson's salary will also go up from $600,000 to $650,000 a year, and she received a deferred compensation plan of $50,000 a year. Board of Regents President Mike Richards said in his words, "We are very pleased with our university leadership." There was also word about the upcoming RAGBRAI, the Register's annual great bicycle ride across Iowa. It will make its annual run across the state from July 24th to the 30th, starting from the Missouri River city of Sergeant Bluff to Lansing on the Mississippi River. More than 17,000 riders already are registered for the nation's biggest annual cycling tour. And the Trib reported on the world of weather, Iowa style. Both the National Weather Service and the Farmer's Almanac predicted that Iowa will have above-average temperatures this summer. The Almanac, which has predicted weather using what it calls a carefully guarded formula for more than 100 years, said that summer around these parts will be hotter and rainier than normal, with the hottest periods in early and late June and early to mid-July. The Trib's website on Wednesday had plenty of results from Tuesday's primary election in Iowa. Retired U.S. Navy Admiral Mike Franken won the Democratic nomination for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat Tuesday night. He easily defeated Democrats Abby Finkenauer and Glenn Hurst for the nomination. Franken won 55% of the vote, Finkenauer won 40%, and Hurst won about 5%. Now, Franken will oppose longtime Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley in the November general election. Grassley easily defeated Republican State Senator Jim Carlin in the primary on Tuesday night. Tuesday's other big primary story was State Senator Zach Nunn's victory in the Republican primary in the 3rd Congressional District in Iowa. Nunn won about 67% of the vote against fellow Republicans Nicole Hasso and Gary Loeffler. He will face Democratic 3rd District incumbent Cindy Axne, who had run unopposed on Tuesday night. In another statewide race, Linn County Auditor Joel Miller won the Democratic nomination for Iowa Secretary of State and the right to run against Republican incumbent Paul Pate in November. And in the Republican primary for State Auditor, small business owner Todd Helleber won the GOP nomination against former State Representative Mary Ann Hanusa. Helleber got 51% of the vote compared to Hanusa's 49%. He will face Democratic incumbent Auditor Rob Sand, who had run unopposed in the Democratic primary. And the Trib followed up on the fatal shooting of two women outside the Cornerstone Church in Ames last week. One of the victims was Iowa State University student Vivian Flores. Her twin sister, Valerie, told a reporter that Vivian had been the light of her life and that it had been a joy to live with her and walk through college with her. She said Vivian had been energetic and joyful. Yesterday's Trib reported online about the funeral for Eden Montang, one of those two young women who had been gunned down outside Cornerstone Church. Mourners celebrated Eden's intelligence and sparkle. Her family had requested that people attending the service at Cornerstone avoid wearing black and instead wear bright colors. And they did. Cornerstone pastor Mark Vance said everyone described Eden as a fun-loving, articulate, spunky, thoughtful young woman with a colorful personality. Eden was 22 years old, and fellow Iowa State University student Vivian Flores was 21 when they were gunned down outside Cornerstone Church. Vivian's funeral was set to be held yesterday afternoon. And yesterday's Trib also reported that the gunman who had shot and killed Eden and Vivian had been relieved from his full-time Iowa National Guard duties late last year after a guard investigation following criminal charges that had been filed against him. And separately, the guard also had investigated the relationship between Jonathan Whitlatch and Eden Montang, who had served in the same guard unit. They had been in a romantic relationship that had recently ended. That relationship may have violated U.S. Army regulations, since Whitlatch outranked Montang. And that is your summary of the news from the past week's Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, leaving now for the weekend, but planning to return right here to Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll report on what's been going on around the state. And there's been plenty going on around the state. Between now and Monday, let's both plan to have a safe, healthy, and I hope, happy weekend.
The second historic jug band performance at Rippey's Orchard, Ames, Iowa. The date being November 18th. Yeah. This is the 9 o'clock. This is the traditional starting number. John Newband playing rhythm on the guitar. Preparing to come in is his brother Steve on banjo. And typical response to the first banjo part comes Raleigh Buckmaster. Folks, we're very happy to have with us tonight a longtime dear friend sitting in one last time on the washboard, Ivan Hanthorn. Backing Ivan up on second washboard is the third Newbin brother, Mark. Mark the Greaser is his friends call him. Coming in on the harmonica, it's the group sex symbol. Our first, probably the only drag queen harmonica player you're going to see in this bar, or at least tonight. My name is Tom Richards, and I'm on a power trip. This is Memphis.
Memphis is a lady's town in Memphis, Tennessee. Triangular guard who's trying to get in touch with me. He might have
the way it was in place called. Because my uncle took the message there and wrote it on the wall.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And yes, have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend. And the music interlude was Tom Richards. And with the Jug Band, which places me squarely back in the 1970s where the Ames Reunion is focusing. It'll be coming up June 10th, 11th, and 12th. Go to amesreunion.org to learn more. But yeah, there was music that's going to be revisited Friday night at the Mother's Pub, 2900 West Street here in Ames, just west of the campus. And then more activities at the Great Hall on Saturday, 3 in the afternoon until 10 at night. And then a picnic on Sunday, 11 a.m. at Brookside Park. A lot to look forward to this weekend. A lot to look forward to in our fundraising.
And Pat, we've got as a guest today, Mark Edwards. And for listeners, it's 16 minutes after the hour of the month. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Guys, it's an honor to be here.
Yeah. You know, we know you're at least an occasional listener.
Well, yeah.
Talk to us a little bit.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I got hooked on Peter Beauchamp all mixed up here a number of years ago, and I became addicted. I couldn't stay away from it. The hard part was I had to listen to it when it was live, and now that you've got the archives and stuff, I can go listen to it anytime. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful mix, and so that really caught my attention to community radio, because it brought me into a community that new music. I hadn't heard some new, I don't stay up with the newer music, and so he had a great mix of newer and political things and old tapes of people talking. It was just, I'd never heard anything like that before, so it was really brought me right in.
So you heard that here on
I was from the start there with that one. So, and then there's lots of others. I mean, you know, I'm older, and so I like hearing some of that old music where I know the words and stuff, but I'm always trying to kind of keep up. And so it's a wonderful blend here of different music styles, and especially like Mike Murphy's blend of things has just been enlightening, because I thought I knew music, but boy, he's brought up some stuff that's just been wonderful to hear. So,
and Bob Edwards with his 8-track garage sale, the background that he provides, but just a wide range of musical interests with Paul Hertz's morning masterpieces. And now I'm going to run the risk of leaving somebody out, because there's Friday Night with Gildy and All Things Piano.
Yeah, Tom Russell and Eric B's.
Eric
B's. And then we've got John Bassard's program.
But one thing I've noticed, I've heard this from other listeners, they'll find something and they enjoy, and then it builds from there, which is kind of where we're at with trying to build our membership.
Sure.
We're trying to just kind of put this all together. And if there was a menu for that, it would help. But in lieu of that, we just seem to do the best we can and pick on topics that have a broad appeal. And the environment is kind of what I think of when I think of Mark Edwards. I think of the environment. Well, your Be Wild, Rewild. If people are interested in those archival programs that's been featured here on KHOI. But beyond that, your music and environmental interests. And some things that come to mind is the live streaming option.
Yeah, I like that. I'm not a techno person, but now I got my phone with little earbuds and I walk around doing stuff, listening to programs, and that's just wonderful to me. That's just changed everything. But, you know, to the environmental thing, I look at kind of what's going on here in the community, and, you know, I follow all the papers, just try to keep up, and I see that, you know, the coverage of the environmental is really, the local is just disappearing. It's just sad to see that happening, and different writers writers over time. And so, you know, I'm very interested in trying to be aware of what's around me outside and what's going on, whether it's tadpoles or birds or whatever, because that's my community too.
Yeah, let's hold that thought. We need to encourage people to go to the website, khoifm.org, pledge and become a member, or maybe just consider even increasing your sustaining membership value as we're growing now to a new station format. And like anything else, our dollars are limited, but if you can see it in your heart to encourage your family and your neighbors to just get involved and then grow that here at KHOI, I think is what we're really attempting to do. And we'll have other thoughts later in the program, Mark Edwards, but thank you so much for coming in. And let's welcome Mary Rankins, Sustainability Director with the City of Ames and Iowa State University. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Pat. It's lovely to join you, of course, as always.
Yeah, thanks. It's great to have you with us. And as you notice, we are fundraising. And I know you've been a staunch supporter of KHOI Community Radio for a number of years now.
Yes, I think there's nothing better than supporting what is important to us in our community to keep informed and involved and just continue to grow and sustain our wonderful Ames community.
Thanks for all that you contribute to that wonderful Earth Day appreciation that we did last April. Our listeners may recognize your name and your voice for those activities. But you've brought one of those presenters from the environmental days of earlier this spring, David Yiniang.
Yeah, good morning, David.
Good morning, Mary. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Oh, we're great here. So wonderful to hear your voice once again. And I'll introduce you as a key individual with the environmental health and safety that we are going to focus on now. You've been in existence 50 years.
Yes, we have. And today we are celebrating our 50-year anniversary. And we have things planned, rain or shine, we'll be happy.
Yeah, I'm going to just say I really welcome the spring shower like we're experiencing here at dawn, coming into work, and it's just, it puts you in a good mood, because we're going to have more water, that's for sure, and clean water.
Yeah, and so David, it is a big day for your team in environmental health and safety. I am so excited. Congratulations on all the festivities. And how fortunate that you're taking some time to join us today to talk about these 50 years. David, first of all, talk about just the journey. I think it is always interesting in celebratory moments like this to reflect back on the journey that you have all accomplished together. Talk a little bit about that journey for you all.
It's been quite a journey. Our department, I will talk more about this during the show. Our department was founded in 1972, and obviously this is 2022, so we are 50 years old, and we're taking time today to try to commemorate that and look at our history, look at what we've done, invite people to come and see. Also, we have an open house that is going to go from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., I will talk more about that during our time together this morning. First, let me reflect on what is environmental health and safety doing at the university.
Where's the open house going to be located, David?
Okay, well, the open house will be here on 2809. What's the right address? 2408 Bailey Drive, here on the campus of Iowa State University. And if you're heading south on on Stang Road, when you cross 18th Street and you come to the next light will be Daily Drive. And if you go west and drive as far as you can go west, you will be at Environmental Health and Safety Services Building.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe back to what are the responsibilities of environmental health and safety on our campus? In the interest of time, I'm just going to give you an abbreviated look of what we are responsible for. First, biological safety. The university works with a lot of biological materials from animals, plants, and so on and so forth. So we have a group of people here in environmental health and safety that helps to guide and coordinate the safe use of human, animal, and plant pathogens, biological. So we advise our researchers and about policies, regulations that Iowa State must follow in order to use biological materials. Another program area that we are responsible for is what we call environmental programs. Environmental programs basically deals with water, air, and soil. Some of you might know something about what we call the Clean Air Act. There are things you cannot, or the law does not permit you to spew into the environment, into the air. So we assist the campuses making sure that the things that we use that can escape into the air and pollute the air does not happen. We conduct environmental assessments, the hazardous waste disposal and recycling. We do spill prevention. We do not, EPA does not like mayor does DNR, like anything to escape into the environment or waters or soil that would harm the environment or actually injure people. So we are responsible to make sure that none of that happens. We also deal with storage tanks under this program of both above ground tanks and underground storage tanks. We deal with stormwater protection. Now, if you the campus does have buildings. When we build buildings and we basically disturb the soil, our job is to make sure that the surface soil from getting into our storm sewers that will get to our streams that will pollute the streams. So that's environmental management. We also have a segment that deals with emergency management. Our campus is a big campus. We have upwards of 200 buildings. We have AEDs in those buildings that must be maintained, must be serviced. We provide building information. How do you evacuate a building when there is something wrong? So we deal with all of those evacuation information. Emergency operations center, when there's a crisis on campus, we have a lot of people that gather together to deal with those incidents and manage those incidents appropriately. We conduct emergency preparedness exercises. We're helping our units to develop plans so that if something should go wrong, they can survive it. They can recover and get back to what they normally do. We also have a section of the department that deals with fire safety programs. In our buildings, some of our buildings are complicated and they are multi-level buildings, so we have evacuation procedures for all the buildings. How do you get out of building, for instance, if there is fire? We also train people on fire safety procedures and information. We provide fire extinguisher training. The university has about 7,500 fire extinguishers scattered all over campus. And we are responsible for making sure that those fire extinguishers operate optimally when they are needed. So if they are discharged, we are responsible for recharging them, testing them, and then putting them back where they were discharged. So it's a lot of work to do that, and we are required to, and we do inspect those fire extinguishers once a month. So that's a big program. We also help the university manage what quantity you should store in what kind of building, laboratories or storage areas. We also do hot work permits. If you are wearing, for instance, what protection do you need in order to wear properly or in order that you don't set the work site or the building on fire. So we are responsible for those things. Our next program will be laboratory safety. We have about 1,800 laboratories on campus. That's quite a number of laboratories we are responsible for. We keep inventory of our chemicals, equipment disposal, field code inspections and assessment. We do laboratory surveys to make sure that we have the equipment in the laboratories that will help people if there's an emergency. We also, everything we do is regulated. We are just another member of the public that is regulated. So our laboratories are also regulated. So we help workers in the laboratory comply with the regulations that are out there. Another segment that we deal with is occupational health and safety. This is a rather big program that involves a lot of people. Ergonomics evaluation, for instance, this happens because we have a number of offices. We want to make sure your office setup is properly oriented so you don't get damage of any part of your body or anything of the sort. So we help you reorient your workstation properly. We help with injury prevention. When there is an incident, we conduct accident investigation. We also refer people to occupational medicine. We deal with personal protective equipment. During the pandemic, everybody now knows what PPE is. So it's the PPE. So there's a number of operations that require that you protect yourself from being exposed. We do shop safety. We have a number of shops on campus. And so we deal with confined space safety. We deal with asbestos, lead and mold evaluations, respiratory protection programs. Anybody that has a potential to be exposed to any airborne material has to be protected using a respirator. We conduct workplace hazard assessment and evaluations. So yeah, that's a lot from all the things that we do.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I mean, it seems like you're touching every corner of campus. Yeah, you're ensuring the safety of every single person on campus, and yet you are also ensuring that everybody does the great work that they need to do at Iowa State University. So thank you and your team. Absolutely.
Just to add to that, our basic goal at DHNS is conveyed by, we have a tagline, DHS. That means everyone home safely. That is,
oh, I love that.
So we want everybody home safely. We want nobody to take any contaminants home and contaminate their families after work and all that. So that's what we are here for.
Professor Inye, Mike Metz had one question.
Yeah. Hey, Mike Metz here. In a former life, of course, I was working out at the vet diagnostic laboratory, and so I had the pleasure of working under some of those environmental health and safety guidelines, and I have to say I took some of those home and practiced them on an individual basis. So I thank you for your time and for the department, and I just want to ask you, do you have a favorite memory that you could share with our listeners?
Okay, for that memory, I haven't been here as long as I have. I think maybe one of my, I will mention two for that memories. I don't know if any of you remember, or some of our audience might remember, that the Iowa State University had a dairy farm site in Ankeny. And so this was off campus, of course, in Ankeny, and we, the university, decided that we were going to basically evacuate that property and bring the farm closer to Ames. But in order to do that, because we had used this site for decades and decades, you know, there were contamination found at the site. So the work to clean that site up and make of resources, the EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers. So with us involved in that process to manage that property to where we could, the university could turn around and hand it over to the city of Ankeny, and now being developed. So that's a favorite memory, because it took a lot of team, both within the university and outside the university, to get that done.
Yeah, what a great memory. What it sounds like you had a lot of great memories. Dr. Inye, anything else, Mary? I'm going to have to let you go here on Friday.
I know, there's so much to discuss, and what I would say to our listeners is, if you have the opportunity, please go to this afternoon's open house celebration of 50 years of environmental health and safety. A pop-up museum is going to be a focus and displayed wonderful ice cream by ISU Creamery, but all of this wonderful team David has been talking about will be available to share more stories and talk about the great work you're doing.
Yeah, and Sai will show up too, so if you want to have a conversation with Sai, show up, yes.
Well, okay, 1 to 3 p.m.
Yes.
Okay,
Sai will be there from 1:30 to 2:30.
1:30 to 3:30, 2408 Daily Drive. Thank you so much, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for the City of Ames and Iowa State University, and Dr. David Inyen with Environmental Health and Safety. Thank you. Have a good weekend, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Congratulations again, David.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations. It is 7:38 on your Friday. You're listening to Local Talk on KHUY Community Radio. And I'm your host for the hour, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. And Mark Edwards is here to chip in on fundraising topics. And how would you like to see the coverage of the environment improved here at KHUY, Mark Edwards?
The environment's part of the community, and you can't buy community. You know, you can only support it and participate in it, and that's what I try to do in my personal life. And so I think we need to always consider how to bring that into our daily lives, and we do that by watching birds and squirrels and things like that. But, you know, more and more as we get lost in the technology, we separate ourselves out. But I think, you know, the environment is a big part of the community, and we fail to understand how it supports everything else at times. And so
everything seems to be connected.
Yep.
And we don't just do one thing in nature. But if you do support KHOI Community Radio, it is among supporting the arts, supporting political issues, supporting the environment, offering a welcome format for musical performances. And the book clubs and just the social interaction, we're really attempting to do it all as volunteers. So you kind of have an opportunity to rub elbows with people that know the true value of the human spirit here at KHOI.
That's for sure. Yeah, and I've really appreciated KHOI. It's so unique in terms of environmental things, because that's kind of been my field, and I still learn something every time there's a program on here about the environment. So thank you for covering that.
Well, and going to the website, khoifm.org, we'll mention it one more time. If you are a sustaining member, consider maybe your budget can allow for a little increase and a bump. If you're considering becoming a member, the welcome mat is open, and I think a lot of good things come from your initial membership here at KHOI. Whatever it is that brought you here, just start expanding from there.
And we have membership levels, but we will not turn anything down. We just want you to become a member out there. Start supporting your community radio station, and I think it'll grow on you. Once you tune in and start supporting, you'll feel a part. And we welcome you, and please support us.
Yeah, I love that message. And there's going to be an Ames reunion this weekend. We're hoping that a lot of people are going to be returning to Ames. And this is not to exclude anyone. If you have thoughts of how your life has progressed from the 1970s through the 1980s and 1990s. If you're a younger individual, you're sure going to have the opportunity to rub elbows with people that probably your parents were involved with at one time here in Ames. So one of the local musicians that has really contributed mightily to KHUI is Tom Richards, and we've got some of his thoughts about this Ames reunion coming up.
Well, I said, told him everything. He says we go out, we get no laugh. Well, I said, told him everything. He says we go out, we get no laugh. Bring him dead or alive. I said, whoa, whoa, no. Bring him dead or alive. Well, definitely, he was.
Tom Richards, welcome to Local Talk.
Hi.
Well, your name is synonymous with Local Talk since we feature the Ballad of Kate Shelley, music from an earlier era. Maybe we'll start there. When did you do the Ballad of Kate Shelley with Al Horace?
You know, a long time ago, I can't tell you when, but I think in the 1990s, maybe even in the 1980s. This goes back when Al and Deb were living in this old brick house over in Boone that he called the Owl House. That's his music publishing company, it's Owl House Music. And we were just fiddling around with recording equipment, and it was just one of the things, and he was singing me those parts. You know, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da, you know, and I'd be trying to play him on my mandolin. He kind of sang that to me, and I played what I thought he was trying to sing, and he recorded it.
Created music. Well, we sure enjoy it, and we sure enjoy the music of that era and earlier, and we are kind of focusing on the Ames reunion topic. What was the music scene like for Tom Richards back in the 1970s?
Well, I've been thinking about that, and it all goes back to the YMCA when it was on campus under Frank Johnson. Alumni Hall.
Oh, yeah, just south of Beardshoot.
Yeah, that was a little outpost of Christendom on the university campus there. It was owned by the YMCA, and students lived up in the upper floors, and they had administrative offices there on the main floor and a like a drop-in student center. And then in the basement of that building, on Friday nights, they had hoot nannies. And I think it was called the Rathskeller.
Oh, yes. Basement of the old alumni hall.
yeah, the Quarter Stove.
Quarter Stove restaurant, yeah, where we got our lunch.
yeah.
Well, oh, God, that's...
Cold cucumber soup, yeah.
Yeah, but the Rathskeller, yeah.
And then they called it the Catacombs also. That's sort of an inside joke, you know, it's like a place where countercultural people can hide. And that's really what it was. So when I was in high school in the, like 65, 66, I would go there on Friday nights if I wasn't going to a basketball game or something. And it was open mic, three song limit. Yeah, you could do three songs, and then if you want to do more, you had to wait for your turn to come around again. And then if nobody wanted to do anything, Frank Johnson would come up, and he would get his guitar and sing. And he was so square that by the time he was done with his songs, there'd be somebody ready to get back up there.
He's motivated, I see.
Uh-huh. But he was such a great man. So there's Ames Youth for Equality back in those times. This was in the Civil Rights era, Martin Luther King Jr., and all that stuff, and Ames kids were just, there were two books. There was The Ugly American, and there was another book, Poverty in America, by Michael Harrington, and it was like, he had grown up in this middle-class paradise in the Midwest, and the thought that there were people who couldn't live where they wanted to live, or
Sure.
It was just offensive, you know. It's just like, oh, that's impossible. And the idea that there were poor people in the United States, it was like, well, I don't know any poor people. You know, it's just sort of a reaction that, oh yeah, Allison Huntress and Steve Pepper and Tony Pounds, Jane Seinhurst. We would go to these demonstrations, and at that time, these songs, and I hope it's the same way today for young people, but these songs that we sang, it was like a deeply religious thing, you know. You remember that song, Kumbaya?
Sure.
That's a joke today. But we would sing that, and on a song about, you know, it's an African phrase, come by here, Lord.
Well, we used to sing it around the campfire at Boy Scouts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably Cub Scouts, too. But.
It was a song about God being present in the lives of small, oppressed people. You know, someone's singing, someone's praying, someone's crying. So it is. You know, I mean, today we just, oh, yeah, it's like a cliche now. And then that song, We Shall Overcome.
Sure.
I mean, those were songs about how we wanted things to be better, and, you know, it was really important. I just hope that kids, young people today, have something like that, that kind of gives them a spiritual connection to trying to make life better. But anyway,
Well, that's a very good point. There would be a lot of people between 10th, 11th, and 12th that had experiences of the 60s and 70s, and that's kind of why I think there's universal topics here. So you really struck upon basically the core of the issue when you said that music meant so much at the time, like music really mattered. Were there other destinations than Alumni Hall around Ames, or was that kind of the best?
I'm sure there were, but...
Of course, you were probably underage, there was a 21 drinking age in the 60s.
Yeah, it seemed like it went on and off.
Yeah. But then, so I might just spread this a little bit further. We had Ralph Rosenberg talking about Dugan's Deli earlier.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, once it converted from the grocery store, you probably remember it. When it was the grocery store there on West Street, just west of campus, and then it became a hot spot for music and for just a place to hang out and have a beer. Did you play Dugan's in that 70s era?
Oh sure.
What was that like?
That's the things that had gotten rolling a little bit. You know, we kind of just rolled from civil rights right into anti-Vietnam. And also, we got more and more alienation into that word. Alienated youth. You know, so there was this crowd of people that you ran with. Don Smith, we used to play Botticelli with Don Smith.
There's a name. He ran for student body president.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He got elected, and then he got run out of town.
Yeah, there was some indiscretion with the weed of the times, I guess, and we'll leave it at that. But
they were going to come down on his vice president, Mary Lou. They had something on her. Uh-huh. And they said, look, they gave him a choice to make, and he did the gallant thing.
Yeah. And that's when Dugan's was still a grocery store. But so maybe let's, if we could, just kind of explore how much of the local music scene in Ames that you were aware of ultimately played Dugan's Deli.
Oh my, that's 100% of everybody, I would say.
Okay. So, well, that says a lot for their contribution to the era.
It was pretty pivotal.
But what was it about the 70s and 80s that you'd like to share?
I think, by the way, you had asked me about, was there another place besides the Y, and the other place was Frisbee House. I don't know if you recall Frisbee House.
I don't.
Well, I was over there where the Blaze Pizza is approximately, just across Lincoln Way, across from the lake. and there were some houses up on, kind of up on the hill there.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a Frisbee House was United Campus Christian Ministries. Mark Rellage was the director of that, and there were a lot of meetings. You know, places for meetings was the Y, the Frisbee House, or just in the union, in the basement of the unit. So those were kind of the locations, and then central campus.
Right.
So if there was any kind of a demonstration or a public gathering, there would be music there as part of getting people together and singing the songs that we knew together. And some, you know, there was this thing where the leader would call the verse and then everybody would sing it, you know, So that was all, and it's all kind of traditional. We didn't realize it was traditional, but we didn't realize it was anything. We were just doing
it. Kind of creating your own traditions of the moment that later became traditions. Okay. That's a really good point.
Now, here's this peace vigil on the ISU campus. And so these bunch of musicians show up for it, and we played all night long. And it was John Euban and Steve Euban and Ivan Hanthorn and Steve Johnson and I. And we all knew this repertoire of music from the Jim Kweskin Jug Band. We knew all, we had two albums out of three, and we knew all the albums cold. Mm-hmm. And so we just were an instant band, you know. And we were born in a peace vigil in the middle of the night. So we were just sort of just part of it all. So then from that point on, when there was some kind of a demonstration, we were just part of it. And then Susan Osborne came along.
Oh, sure.
And there were one or two other people that sang, that be, you know, kind of were the voices of anti-war movement.
Of that era. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So your insights are really appreciated so very much, Tom Richards. And that jug band reference, now that's big. I should have written that down, because I do remember the jug band. And you were the voice of Central Campus in any type of gathering, as I recall, of that era. And so are you looking forward to the reunion?
Well, there's a gathering on Friday night at Mother's Pub / Dugan's Deli, and that is slated to be like an acoustic jam. So I'm really looking forward to seeing who all shows up for that, how that goes.
Yeah, and I appreciate it that it seemed like in our aging, we decided that acoustic would be just fine. But I know you were probably involved in summer. That place would really get to rocking.
Oh, yeah.
People dancing on the bar. But there probably will be, we won't anticipate much of that on June 10th. But I'll look forward to catching up to you and thanking you in person for willingness to come on Local Talk here on Community Radio and lend your voice. Is there anything else, Tom Richards, you'd like to share?
I'm so glad Keith took all those shots, all those photos. I've just enjoyed looking at them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had him on the second one of these installments, and he said, yeah. I asked him, well, why 20 years later? He said, well, I got to looking at the pictures from 2002, and everyone had a natural smile. And a photography, we just don't see that. So that told him something. And it might be worthwhile. Well, thank you very much, Tom Richards, for the music of the era all these years, and may you continue, and good luck, and
thank you.
Should be a fun age reunion. Thank you.
Where did you die? love, and you can pick up the shooting down. And you love to pick up the, and you can pick up the shooting down. Number four, it falls down. Whoa, Lord, number
four. Well, thank you, Tom Richards. We all have a lot to look forward to musically over this weekend with the Ames reunion. And it is our membership drive time. And Mark Edwards has been sitting in with us this morning. And I'd love to have a guest that speaks from the heart, Mark Edwards. And you do that so well.
Well, thanks, Pat. My speaking has become less and less trying to convince people and more just sharing what I see and feel. So that's, thank you. And, you know, the community thing is really exciting to me. I don't know many other places where you have a community reunion every 50 years or something. You know? I mean, it's amazing to me that this is taking place.
It seems like if it was important in 1972, its importance now is almost amplified. If it was important then, it's definitely important now.
Absolutely.
You know, we talk about sharing as opposed to convincing. Well, by sharing, that's a good way to convince people.
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, we're sharing the airwaves, and we're asking for membership. And if you've got a voice, or if you feel this is touching your heart, streams of rational thought behavior, which is what we're striving for here at KHOI. Go to that website, khoifn.org, and become a member or consider increasing your sustainable membership role.
And Mark is just one of those members of the community that we are trying to serve here as Ames Community Radio Station, KHOI-FM. We'd sure love to have you become a member, and it doesn't take much. Anything that you are willing to pull out of your pocket and share with us so we can keep our programming on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Mark Edwards. And thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike Metz. Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. at 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. If you have interest in joining the Local Talk team, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas. Come join the Local Talk team. And we are streaming live at khoifm.org or call 515-292-2878. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to that website, khoifm.org, and find the yellow donate button. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Friday report. And thanks to our guests, Mary Rankin, David Inyang, Tom Richards, and Mark Edwards, and thank you, co-host Mike Metz. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was The Jug Man. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! That immediately follows, and Adagio at 9 a.m. Then KHOI, War in Ukraine at noon with Svetlana Simpson.
Sabarska.
Sorry. And hoping you have a good weekend, everybody. Enjoy the birds in your backyard here in your feeders. I'm sorry, Sabarska. I'll work on that. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again.